Welcome to the University of Michigan Press podcast, featuring interviews with University of Michigan Press authors. Jason Cienciato and Sean Cahill, experts on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender public policy advocacy, combine an accessible review of social science research with analysis of school practices and local, state, and federal laws that affect LGBT students. In addition, portraits of LGBT youth and their experiences with discrimination at school bring human faces to the issues the authors discuss. LGBT Youth in America Schools is an essential guide for teachers, school administrators, guidance counselors, and social workers interacting with students on a daily basis, school board members and officials determining school policy, nonprofit advocates and providers of social services to youth, and academic scholars, graduate students, and researchers training the next generation of school administrators and informing future policy and practice. Jason Cienciato is an independent consultant specializing in applied research and public policy analysis. Sean Cahill is Director of Health Policy Research at the Fenway Institute in Boston and Adjunct Assistant Professor of Public Administration at New York University. Since you began working on this book, there has been a lot more mainstream attention to the link between school bullying and LGBT students. Why do you think this happened, and how does it affect your goals for the book?
We think that the increased attention to school bullying is positive and has really come about because of a variety of factors. One of the first things we talk about in the book is that youth are simply coming out at younger ages. In the 1980s and 90s, they were coming out while they were in college and living more of an independent life. But now some youth are coming out as young as 13 and 14 years old. And that really creates a whole set of new experiences, not just for students, but also for the schools, as they deal with all of the ramifications that come with both positive and negative coming out. And there's definitely also been a shift in culture to be more supportive of LGBT people. In general, anti-gay or anti-LGBT, which stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender bullying, is less tolerated. And so people are speaking out, students are speaking out against it, teachers are becoming more empowered to protect students who are victims of anti-LGBT bullying. And the advent of social media is really also helping to draw more attention, not just through enabling students to speak out about their experiences on YouTube or on Facebook and call out for help, but also on the negative side, providing opportunities for cyberbullying and other ways that these students are being teased and harassed. Wrapped all together, I think these things really point to how policy and culture are having to catch up to some of the technological and sociological changes that have happened in the past decade that are making LGBT people more accepted in society, but also maybe causing a little bit more backlash when it comes to the intersection of LGBT issues and students in school.
And one thing I would just add, Melissa, is another factor is a dramatic increase in gay supportive policies that have been adopted over the last decade. So if you look at the state of affairs in 2000, less than 5% of students in the United States went to a school where there was an anti-bullying policy or law in place and a non-discrimination law in place covering sexual orientation and gender identity. Today, close to half of students in the United States are covered by such a non-discrimination protection. And I think that's another reason why schools are just paying a lot more attention to anti-gay bullying and other kinds of bullying.
What are some of the problems affecting LGBT youth in middle and high school that are different from the challenges faced by LGBT adults?
LGBT adults in general have more autonomy and socioeconomic independence. They have more capacity to both advocate for themselves and more legal and social resources to go to when, you know, for example, in the workplace they're being discriminated against or, you know, they're independent from their family. So even if they grew up in a home where they weren't accepted because of the sexual orientation or gender identity, they have an opportunity to create and support their own life. In contrast, students in the U.S. have no choice but to go to school for 180 or more days a year. And that could lead to, for many students, including a few that we profile in the book, day after day harassment, intimidation, and bullying. And they don't have access to resources they can use to take themselves out of that situation. They don't have autonomy to move themselves to a different school. And they don't have safety and security that many adults have, because they may be living in a household that doesn't accept who they are. They may fear for their safety. They may fear that they could be thrown out of their homes if they came out at home. They may attend a church that also doesn't accept who they are, so the places that are set up for them to be able to go to talk about issues that are deeply affecting them aren't available to them. And in the end, this translates into youth feeling isolated. And one of the most important points that we make in the book is that many of the programs that have been put in place, as Sean mentioned earlier, non-discrimination and protection laws, gay-straight alliances in schools, teacher trainings, curriculum that includes positive examples of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, these help to reverse that isolation and provide an outlet for youth to advocate for themselves in the same way that adults can.
How have social media affected bullying behavior in general and anti-LGBT bullying in particular?
Social media reduce social isolation for LGBT youth and can provide access to resources. You know, for example, a number of organizations concerned about the safety of all youth, including those who are LGBT, such as the Trevor Project or the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, they all provide easily accessible, age-appropriate information that not only can help students in crisis, but also equip them with tools and information that they can use to advocate for themselves at their school and at home. At the same time, these social media also provide access to bullies and people who would intimidate these students in ways that are sometimes anonymous. And there are a number of examples of kids. Most recently, the case of the Rutgers student Tyler Clementi, who completed suicide after he was spied on by his roommate, in a sense a form of cyberbullying, bring those issues to light. There was another young girl in Massachusetts who wasn't LGBT but was cyberbullied based on the fact that she was from Ireland and had a thick accent, and she also eventually completed suicide. And so we see both opportunity for good to come out of the advent of social media, but also the need for policy to catch up to technological change so that there are tools that adults can use and youth can use to ensure their safety and security online. I'd like to add one more thing to that, if I can. One of the examples of the areas where policy needs to catch up to technological change is in the major piece of federal legislation that governs public schools. It came to be known as the No Child Left Behind Act under the George W. Bush administration. One of the things that that act added was a provision that required schools who receive federal funding to implement some sort of internet filtering software. And we spent some time in a chapter in the book on the NCLB Act talking about how that filtering software often limits access to age-appropriate and often life-saving information related to gay and lesbian issues to students in schools, and efforts that have been put in place to ensure that while students are protected from information they shouldn't see, they have access to information that is important for them as part of their education and well-being.
There is a lot of attention in the book to gender nonconformity. How are the issues faced by students who may be transgender or who simply do not conform to gender stereotypes distinct from gay and lesbian issues, and how are they related?
Even though our book specifically focuses on research and other information on students who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, I think one of its most important findings is that many, if not most, of the students who are harassed based on perceived sexual orientation or gender identity actually don't grow up to be LGBT. And that fact is rooted in gender nonconformity. In other words, students who do not act or behave in ways deemed socially acceptable for their gender. So, for example, you could have a girl who plays softball, is on the volleyball team, and you know doesn't wear dresses to school, who might be teased and called names and perceived to be a lesbian, or a boy who is in the marching band or in the drama club, who is heterosexual and is teased regardless because of his club activities. We also see that many students who are far too young to understand their own sexuality are teased and harassed, called anti-gay epithets. There's a conversation that we recount in one beginning of one chapter of a five-year-old asking his father what the word fag is, because that's what he's called in school by his classmates. Obviously, that young boy has, no clue and won't for a long time know what his own sexual orientation is, but is being teased because young people grow up in a socio-political environment where anti-gay speech is, by and large, deemed okay and often modeled by their parents. One of the studies that we looked at, one of the more recent studies in the book, looked at the correlation between gender nonconformity, bullying, and health outcomes. And it found that kids who were teased because of gender nonconforming behavior, regardless of the actual sexual orientation and gender identity that they grew up to have, were far more likely to be bullied at an earlier age and suffer more long-term negative mental health outcomes, including showing symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. This question also addresses one of the areas where there's a greatest need for more research, and that's around the experiences of transgender youth. We do know in general that they experience higher rates of bullying and violence than LGBT youth, and there's a dire need for a policy to also catch up to the needs and protections of transgender kids. For example, what happens to schools who provide single-sex education? Will they allow a youth who identifies as transgender to be with the sex that they identify? How do we ensure access to safe locker rooms for a student who's come out as transgender and wants to use the locker room that is connected with the gender that they feel they are? Schools are having a hard time facing this issue, but they have no choice because transgender students are protected. A number of federal laws and an increasing number of state laws require that schools protect transgender students the same way that they protect students based on biological sex. In other words, if a transgender female student, a student who was born biologically male but identifies as a female, wants to go to school in female clothing, that student needs to be protected and treated the same way that biologically female students would be treated in regards to dress and access to both curricular and extracurricular activities.
What tools and resources are currently available to combat anti-LGBT bullying in schools? And what more can be done at the school, district, state, and national levels?
Well, we hope that our book will be a resource for teachers and administrators, as well as for students and their parents, to help change the environment in their schools. But in addition, you know, there's a lot of school districts that have adopted training curricula. For example, in New York City, we have a really great curriculum called Respect for All, which has been given to teachers and staff, and it's really essential that teachers and staff be trained in how to identify bullying and what to do about it. And this includes all staff, you know, bus drivers, lunchroom monitors, staff serving in the cafeteria, that kind of thing. We also need political leadership. So I also serve on the Massachusetts Commission on LGBT Youth, and this was actually founded 20 years ago by the Republican governor of Massachusetts, Bill Weld, as the Governor's Commission on Gay and Lesbian Youth. And it's done some really amazing work over the last 20 years in terms of raising awareness of anti-gay bullying and the experiences of young LGBT people in schools, and also helped parents to get involved in improving school climate. We know from the research that there are a number of resiliency factors that can make schools more affirming and safe environments for LGBT students, kids of LGBT parents, and also improve the educational experience and how students do in terms of their grades and preparation for college. And those include gay-straight alliances, having positive mention of openly gay people in school curricula, having an openly gay role model, whether it's a school staff person or, you know, a family member like an aunt or uncle who's openly gay. And then we think it's also important that health professionals screen their patients for bullying. So pediatricians can play a role by asking their patients on an ongoing basis if everything is okay in their school environment. And then the final thing is we're learning a lot more about LGBT health disparities, and we know that anti-gay prejudice and social exclusion based on real or perceived sexual orientation correlates with negative health outcomes. So, for example, we know that kids who are harassed and bullied in school actually engage in higher rates of HIV risk behavior based on research that Caitlin Ryan published recently. And so we also encourage public health officials to challenge anti-LGBT bias and social exclusion as a public health threat that has real public health impacts.
There are a number of additional state and federal level policy tools that I think are important. In the book, we include a comprehensive list of state non-discrimination laws, anti-bullying laws, anti-harassment laws that can be used to protect LGBT students. In fact, now there are only 3 states that don't have some form of anti-bullying law, Michigan, Montana, and South Dakota. By and large, most states, in fact, 27, have what we call non-enumerated laws or laws that don't specifically say who they protect. In other words, protections based on, for example, sex, race, gender, or sexual orientation. And so we make an argument in the book that in order for these laws to be most effective, they have to say who exactly it is they are protecting and why. At the federal level, in the conclusion of the book, there are a number of policy recommendations that we call for. And one of them is for the passage of the Student Non-Discrimination Act, which would outlaw harassment, bullying, and violence against students based on real or perceived sexual orientation or gender identity. And the Safe Schools Improvement Act, which would require schools to adopt codes of conduct that prohibit bullying and harassment. And just as importantly, enable the Department of Education to collect and report on data on bullying and harassment to see what else can be done to protect students.
So in a presidential election year, we're bound to hear a lot about LGBT rights. A number of candidates have been claiming that laws protecting LGBT people, including students, threaten religious freedom. How would you answer these critics, many of whom also believe that school is not the place to discuss sexuality and that educators should reinforce traditional family values?
Well, you know, these laws that we describe in the book are all about making schools safe educational environments where students can focus on their development, their educational development, their social development. And, you know, it's not about, it's not at all a threat to religious freedom. Parents' rights to raise their children in a conservative religious faith tradition is in no way threatened by anti-bullying protections or non-discrimination protections, any more than teaching evolution violates their religious freedom. The fact is that we live in a pluralistic secular society, you know, and I think that we have to understand that there are separate spheres. And, you know, some of the same folks making this argument that protections for students in schools are somehow a threat to religious freedom, you know, they're also arguing that marriage equality for same-sex couples is somehow a threat to the religious freedom of religious conservatives. But nobody's arguing that, for example, the fact that divorce is illegal in all 50 states violates the religious freedom of Roman Catholics. Roman Catholics don't support divorce, don't believe in divorce, yet that's not seen as a threat to their ability to, you know, believe in and profess their faith, their religious faith.
One of the other important points is that schools are not limiting the religious expression of other students with these laws. What they're saying is that bullying, teasing, harassment cannot reach a point where it prevents students or group of students or teachers from functioning in school, from meeting the mission of school to provide a quality education. It's about behavior, not necessarily about the simple expression of a religious belief. You know, we believe that the freedom of speech, freedom of religion are just as important as freedom of students to attend school in a safe and secure environment. And there's no reason that these laws have to and do infringe on those other freedoms.
Okay, Jason and Sean, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Sure. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
We have been speaking with Jason Cienciato and Sean Cahill, authors of LGBT Youth in America's Schools. To learn more about our books, visit us on the web at press.umich.edu. This podcast has been brought to you by the University of Michigan Press, all rights reserved.